When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Joining us now, someone we haven't had a chance to chat with for a while, with the Alliance for American Manufacturing, it's Scott Paul. Scott, good afternoon.
Hey, Sly, great to be with you.
Are you all dug out? Have you got all the snow cleared?
You know, this Midwester had us out over the weekend, but I just received the dreaded email that a bunch of parents in our school district received that the schools are going to be closed again tomorrow. So that's six days that my sons have been out of school. And it's just, I'm from Indiana, you know this, I cannot wrap my head around the fact that it's causing this sort of mayhem in Washington, D.C.
Now, when a Midwesterner moves to Mason-Dixon line city, like Washington, D.C., does one buy a snowblower? Do you have a snowblower?
Yeah, that's a good question. And so, no, I don't have a snowblower. I had a Bigfoot Made in USA shovel because, honestly, some years you barely need it. Although in 2010 we got also an extraordinary amount of snow. And look, there's a blizzard that happens here, I would say once every 7 or 8 years, where I suppose you could justify having a snowblower, but given, you know, given the opportunity cost and all of that, I'm not sure that it's worth it. And Sly, the thing about having a snowblower is that, yeah, you can get your sidewalks, you can get your driveway done, but then, you know, it's the county road department or the state highway that's doing the roads.
Are your boys old enough to shovel?
They are old enough to shovel, okay. And I employ child labor. I'm very proud to say. I also let them build a toboggan run in the backyard. So okay. We had a little fun too.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's good. That's good. I shouldn't be surprised, but I'm literally stunned watching this presidential race and how reporters don't ask anything about American jobs in manufacturing throughout these debates. Are you surprised?
I'd like to say that I'm surprised, but this is something that the media elites, and look, these are the folks who are moderating the debates, right? These are part of the winners of society, the New York City, Washington, D.C. crowd, and as hard as they try to find some populist questions, it's just not in their... It's not in their blood. It's not in their, you know, they don't hear it on the cocktail party circuit or in the salons they go to, the friends they talk to. And so, yeah, you're right. It doesn't come up. I mean, they asked Donald Trump about his 45% tariff, proposed tariff in China. And that, I mean, honestly, it was the most substantive conversation they've had about this topic in the
well, even that's got to frustrate you, though, because his entire premise of dealing with this, while I understand that he at least is talking about job losses to Mexico and China, his whole premise on this is so strange, is that somehow the people that negotiated these deals were dumb, when in fact, no, they knew what they were doing. It's just that what they were up to wasn't very good.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They, you know, it's funny because Obama leveled the same criticism of Bill Clinton on China, saying y'all negotiated a terrible agreement. Well, then here comes the president with his chance on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and he's done the same thing. So, you know, they get amnesia on this once they get into the White House. But yes, I agree with you. I think that that's, you know, we have priorities in trade policy. And I mean the collective we, not me and you. But, you know, the folks who run our government. And it's protecting patents. It's making sure that, you know, firms like Goldman Sachs have access to financial markets offshore, and it's making sure that multinational companies can extend their supply chain into low-wage countries. And they've executed it pretty perfectly, I would say,
beautifully. It's worked out exactly, but nobody bothers asking. It's like, wait a minute, And for instance, when the president came out and said that, in fact, you know, I wouldn't do anything that would hurt jobs. I've spent my whole career trying to help people with jobs. You know, I do think that it would have been fair to look back at the trade agreements that he signed and look at whether they cost jobs. You'd think that the reporters would ask him about it. They don't. I just saw the projection on your website for the potential job loss from the Trans-Pacific Partnership. 50,000 jobs a year, a total of 450,000 jobs. Wouldn't that be worthy of conversation as to whether that's a good deal for the American public? I mean, I know how important it is whether Donald Trump likes Megyn Kelly, but, you know, and I know how that affects everyone's life, but 450,000 jobs, that's a big hit.
Yeah, that's a huge hit. I think that one of the challenges, and look, this is partly on those of us who are trying to educate these presidential candidates, is that their knowledge of this is, you know, only about an inch deep, and it's basically the talking points that they've been handed by their favorite interest group, right? And so it's hard to have a detailed conversation about this. But I will, you know, Sly, I'm glad you mentioned the job loss, because, you know, that the 400,000 number is from the Economic Policy Institute, which we've used their data before. It's actually held up very well under the scrutiny of time. Now, something called the Institute of International Economics, which is a very pro free trade think tank. Uh-huh. I mean, they did a study that said NAFTA was going to create hundreds of thousands of jobs. All right. So the Institute for International Economics just released a study on the TPP, and it you know, overall it says, you know what, it might increase GDP a tiny little bit by, you know, like 0.5% over a number of years. It might increase our incomes over a number of years by a very, very, very tiny amount. But it will almost certainly cause manufacturing job loss. And their estimate was 120,000. And these are the people who are trying to sell this trade agreement. And this is the study that the administration is using to try to get this passed. So they can't say on the one hand that this is a Made in America free trade agreement that's going to help manufacturing, and on the other hand, there's this study by the most wildly optimistic supporters of the Trans-Pacific Partnership proposed trade agreement that say it's going to cost jobs. So I think that's a real problem, and someone should ask that question. You're right, Sly.
Well, I mean, when the entire election is talking about how people are motivated on both ends of the political spectrum because they're angry about job wage inequality and job losses and lack of opportunity, yeah, I kind of think this is the 800-pound elephant in the room. And yet, you know, that word trade is like catnip for the sushi circuit, the crowd you were talking about. That's as far as they go. That's as far as it will register with their minds. Well, you know, the keeping things open, that's good. Yeah, trade, good. That's as far as they go.
It is, and Sly, it's been interesting. I don't know how far it's filtered out, but in the elite media, there's been some recognition given to a study that some economists at MIT did that basically said, yeah, we've lost a lot of jobs due to trading with China, you know, which is heretical, right? I mean, and it's the, you know, otherwise, you know, esteemed economists in the academy who are saying, yeah, this has been terrible. Trade with China has been terrible for the American worker. And for anybody who values having a job, it's been a terrible deal. And so a number of these columnists and what have you have been looking at this and have been saying, oh, maybe this is why Trump's talking about this and why people are saying, And they can't quite, but to your point, Sly, they can't quite bring themselves to say they were 100% wrong. Some of them have said, well, we were a little wrong about this. And they can't quite say the solution is to push back a little bit, you know, and demand reciprocity from China and maybe put some tariffs on until we get things straightened out. But they're edging up to that line a little bit. And it's been interesting to see. And I will say it's been precipitated you know, by this, they're like, oh, MIT, their numbers can't be wrong, right? They're all geniuses there. And then on the other hand, they're trying to find an explanation for why Trump, you know, has gained a little traction among, you know, some Republican and even Democratic voters, and they look at China and they're like, you know what, yeah, Americans have a right to be angry about it because our politicians aren't doing anything, and Trump's making some promises. I mean, you have to decide for yourself whether you believe what he says or whether he even believes.
Well, I don't believe he I think he only has a marginal understanding of the issue. and I know that he can't change it by fiat. I don't think who knows what he would do, because that would depend on the day and the whim. You know, that's kind of a tough gamble there. On the live line with us from the Alliance for American Manufacturing, Scott Paul. They, of course, are an organization that represents workers and businesses that want to make things here in America. What a novel idea. I want to ask you a little bit about something that happened here in Wisconsin the other day, Scott, with Johnson Controls merging with a company in Ireland. They're using the technique called inversion. They say they're going to save a lot of money on taxes. How is that affecting American manufacturing companies using inversion?
It's a really good question, Sly, and I think it has an impact in a couple of ways. Number one is that for companies that are doing this, they're obviously spending a lot of resources, time, and focus on figuring out their tax strategy rather than investing in their workers or their capital or their products. And that, you know, it might have some short-term balance sheet benefit to them. I don't know that there's a lot of evidence that it positions them well for long-term competitiveness. So I think that's, you know, that's why, you know, came to the shareholders in the short term, absolutely, but positioning them well to be competitive long into the future, particularly in manufacturing, where you have to invest in your workforce, where you have to invest in product development and innovation. I don't know that the evidence is that has a lasting impact. Now, you know, I will say this, that I think that, you know, there's a lot of folks who say our corporate tax rates are too high. These are folks in the business community. I don't agree with that, particularly for Wall Street, because there's all sorts of loopholes that they can jump out of. But what I will say is, because of, and I know we've talked about this before, mm-hmm. because most of the rest of the world has something called a value-added tax, you know, a VAT, mm-hmm. where, you know, if you go to Europe or you go somewhere else, you pay it as a consumer on a product. You know, we obviously don't have that here. We have an income tax, we have a sales tax, we have a corporate tax. We don't have a value-added tax. But that affects imports and exports. And, you know, in Germany, for instance, you know, if there's a German company exporting to the United States, it gets a rebate on the value-added tax. So that's a big bonus. We don't have anything comparable in the United States. And so I think there is some merit to looking at how you can, you know, make our exports a little more competitive through tax policy. But inversions, that doesn't get it done. That's not the solution to the problem. And it is a, you know, it's a kind of a short-term escape valve. Again, shareholders love it, so corporate directors are likely to want to do it. You know, there's some effort through the Obama administration, through some Democrats in Congress, to try to put a stop to it.
What about lowering taxes on manufacturers to try to lure the jobs back here? Is there a way to get them to lure the money, their money and some of their operations back here, but also force them to invest it into workers?
Yeah, I think that can be part of the solution. So, you know, there's the taxes that companies pay overseas, and there's the question about what to do with those, and there may be some merit to the idea that you offer a slightly lower rate to bring that money back as long as it's invested in a productive asset. And by that I don't mean, you know, a company taking out loans or buying back its stock or giving a big dividend right. to its shareholders necessarily, but I do mean, like, pouring it into the workforce or investing in capital or in innovation, things that are going to have returns for jobs and for the economy. There's some merit to that. And then, you know, Ron Kind, you know, rung on the TPP, but, you know, he has a pretty good tax policy bill on manufacturing that would lower the corporate rate specifically for manufacturers, recognizing that they're in global competition in the way that a lot of other, like, retail's not and some other folks are not. And I think there's some merit to that approach as well. But I do think that is one part of the solution. I think you got to deal with trade. I think you got to deal with some other stuff. But I also think that that you do have to do something on the tax front.
Okay, a couple things. Oil prices, how is that affecting our manufacturing, and how about the Fed and our monetary policy for manufacturing and our dollar?
Oh, really good wonky question, Sly.
You like that? I'm a college dropout.
Those are the right questions to be asking, because they do have, you know, lower gas prices. Consumers like it because, you know, you have more disposable income. You're paying less for gas. I think the challenge for manufacturers is that disposable income doesn't necessarily make up for the fact that, number one, there's less of a demand for the type of manufacturing equipment that goes into energy delivery or energy exploration. Number two, these gas prices are going down all over the world. It's not just an American effect. And so, you know, that temporary energy advantage we had due to fracking and all of that, you know, that's almost, that's virtually non-existent now.
Yeah, those jobs in North Dakota and Texas, and boy, Canada's been hit very hard by this.
That's right. So it's been, I think on balance, a net negative for manufacturing oil prices. Now, the Fed raising interest rates, that is not helpful to manufacturing. And it's because that action will tend to make the dollar even stronger. And what that means, you know, strong dollar, that sounds like a good thing, right? But I think the challenge is when it's too strong, it acts as kind of a tax on our exports. And so it's harder for us to ship product overseas. And conversely, it makes it easier. And you see the Chinese currency losing value, the Japanese currency, other currencies. And so those products come in, and they're a little cheaper than they otherwise should be. That obviously means that sales that would be happening from U.S. companies are happening overseas instead, and that puts downward pressure. The net result of that is that, you know, last year, terrible year for manufacturing jobs, terrible year. While the economy gained more than 2.5 million jobs last year, only 30,000 of those were in manufacturing.
What was the top line number there?
There were about 2.6 million jobs created in our economy last year. 30,000 of those, so 1.1% of those were in manufacturing, which is an all-time low.
Well, and of course, so, manufacturing jobs generally pay better, and for every manufacturing job created, there are a few others that end up being created because of that, right? That's why it's a multiplier.
It's a multiplier. That's right. Those jobs pay better, so there's more disposable income. Manufacturing, as you know, from all those towns in Wisconsin and Iowa and elsewhere, Sly, you know, when you have a manufacturing facility, there's supply chain, there's logistics, there's a lot of other stuff that goes with that, and you don't necessarily get that with, you know, if a Walmart store comes in or what have you. And so yeah, those manufacturing jobs, they matter a little more. And so when we're not creating many of them, even if someone's not working in manufacturing, and look, even in Wisconsin, you know, where there's a relatively high percentage of the population working in manufacturing compared to the rest of the country. Most people still don't work in manufacturing, but they feel it too, because the local communities, the economy is not as strong. And I mean, you're witness to that. You would, I mean, I can give you the academic argument, but you see on the ground there.
I sure do. All right, so what was the name of the pro-free trade group that put out the estimate that over 120,000 jobs will be lost?
It's called the Peterson Institute for International Economics. And wow, the Peterson Institute estimated that, you know, about 121,000 manufacturing jobs would be lost. They laid it out there. They're like, look, overall, there's a modest positive effect for the U.S. economy in its estimation, but the manufacturing would get walloped. I appreciate their honesty about its lie, because they have, you know, they were not candid about NAFTA and China and some other things. But, you know, so if I'm there in the White House and I'm President Obama and I'm a president who said, look, I want Made in America to come back, and he spent some time working on manufacturing. He really did. I mean, he went to Wisconsin. He talked about it. He did some things all over the country. I don't know how you can then vigorously advocate for the Trans-Pacific Partnership with a straight face when you say you're still for Made in America and for manufacturing.
He got in with the wrong crowd.
It's going to have a bad impact.
He got in with the wrong crowd. But, you know, fewer and fewer people are buying it. It's just it's really becoming a... You never hear people that are pro Trans-Pacific Partnership advertising it when they're running for public office. I don't talk about it. Not at all. They just don't. Maybe somebody in a certain congressional district somewhere in the country. Maybe one in suburban, you know, over by where you live. That Connolly fella loves free trade.
He sure does. He's in Virginia. And
yeah.
He's a big supporter of it. You know, it's interesting, Sly. Hillary Clinton has said she opposes it in its current form. She left herself a little wiggle room, but she said she opposes it right now. Bernie Sanders has been opposed. Donald Trump says he's opposed. Ted Cruz says he's opposed because it's an Obama trade deal. I don't know what he would do if it wasn't Obama. But I think there you have the four leading polling candidates in both parties who all say that they're at least right now against this thing. That should tell you something.
And Mitch McConnell is sort of holding it up that it may not come up for a vote before the election.
Yeah, I don't know that there's a lot of, you know, vulnerable senators. I don't know what Ron Johnson is saying.
He is remarkably he's always been supported free trade. He is remarkably quiet about it. He's not saying a word. I'm not. That may be a bit academic. He's has a 26% approval rating right now, and it's 13 points down. So it may not. It may not matter.
Indeed, but I can't imagine there's any of those senators that are terribly excited about casting a vote about it before the election. That's
indeed. Right. All right, give your website so people can read the fascinating stuff that you guys do.
Thanks, Sly. I appreciate that. We're at AmericanManufacturing.org, and as Sly, as you mentioned, there's lots of data, but there's also some places where you can take action to keep the candidates honest on manufacturing.
Sounds good, and it's an organization really committed to the manufacturers and the people they employ. It's a great combination. Scott, thanks for coming on the show.
You bet. Always a pleasure, Sly.
Have a great one.
Take care.
Sly'sOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.